The following Dharma talk was presented at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota, as part of the monthly guest Dharma series.
So I guess it's been a couple of months now that when I was planning this particular trip to come out to the Midwest, my family's from Indiana, or it's where I grew up, so I'm back through this area. So it's like mentioned, like, you know, 10 years now I've been coming back. We used to still meet in Mark's living room, Mark and Wynn's living room. And I used to think 40 people was a huge gathering at that time. So this is one. I have an idea, Mark. You're going to need to put a balcony in up here, and then we can still get another 20 people in here maybe. So that'll be your next project. But so I was planning, and I was actually invited to, say, North Dakota to lead a retreat on a loving kindness retreat, and that's one of my main meditation objects is loving kindness. And then I gave a couple of talks at a small university, and they wanted me to talk about compassion, and so I decided when Shelley asked what I wanted to talk about here, I was like, well, let's talk about art. I just decided to just change the subject completely. And I remembered probably about 5 years ago, for about 10 years ago, actually, 10 years, I've been slowly sort of developing art as a meditation meditation object, how to use painting as a meditation technique. And slowly, only in the last, I think every time I think about this, it seems like in the last year it's finally getting to where I kind of like it. So it's still continuous progression. And so I've got a few images of what I've actually just been doing this year, and I was sort of talking about that. But then at the mealtime, I was talking to Mark today at lunch, and was describing to him one of the funny things of that I've noticed with all of my teachers, particularly like three different teachers that I've been learning from meditation or just how to be a monk from. And I did a icon painting workshop with the Catholic father just recently. And I noticed that a trend with all three of these is they're all highly critical of my artwork, and giving me lots of sort of negative feedback and things like that. And Mark was like, "Well, that'd be a great Dhamma talk, you know, to talk about how to give feedback." Because what I was mentioning is, I was a liberal arts education, and when I was in art school, at least there, you know, a lot of the art studio classes was actually learning how to critique other people's artwork. So it's, a lot of it was learning skillfully how to point things out to people. So Mark said that, I was like, well, it's actually, the Buddha does give actually a lot of instructions on that, and I've talked about that quite a bit in some of the practices that I've done. I've probably talked here about it once, where it's a practice of asking for forgiveness. And And the Buddha gives very clear instructions on how to sort of give feedback or admonish people. And so I've taken those two practices of how to admonish people and switched it for like how to ask for forgiveness, sort of mingling the two. So it's something I've thought about a lot, kind of in terms of loving kindness practice as well. So so I had these two themes sort of going, the kind of art and now sort of thinking about admonishment. So I'm opening myself up tonight so you guys can give me all your feedback about my artwork. It was funny when I was actually thinking about this, and Mark pulled out one of Ajahn Suchito. He's a senior monk in our tradition. He lives in England. And he was really creative with his book, Dawn of the Dhamma. He did like a series of 30 paintings of kind of Celtic artwork and drawings, and there's, do you have it in your regular library or just in your office? Just in your office. But if you ever want to see it, it's some crazy wild paintings and stuff that he did. And he made it into a book based on the teachings of the Four Noble Truths, and goes through the Dhammacakka Sutta, and goes through all this kind of paintings are just kind of going through that. And in the one section in there, in the Dhammacakka Sutta, where the Buddha's sort of going through after his enlightenment, there's this thing where the deva realms, the devas sort of will start at like the lower realm, and they start the earthbound devas sort of rejoice at the Buddha's awakening. And then the devas in the next higher realm hear about, they hear the joy and they look down, oh, what's going on? And then they hear about the Buddha's awakening and they start rejoicing. And it goes all the way up into the highest heaven realms. And so Ajahn Sucitto is talking about each of these different realms. And there's two realms that are called, the English translation is the devas who delight in creating, and then devas who delight in the creations of others. And it's interesting that in those two realms, there's two, in the devas who delight in the creations of others, that there's two devas or two sort of gods that are responsible for this heaven realm, and neither one knows that the other one exists. So they think they're the only ones who are there. And so Ajahn Sucitto points out that sort of in this creation realm, there's a lot of delusion there. And so I thought that was really kind of interesting that all of my teachers are sort of, you know, sort of, they have to bring us down to the, sort of the earth realm. Like you're in the creative, you're in your head, and you're kind of doing lofty things. And so it's good for them every once in a while to sort of test you, sort of just sort of, well, you didn't do that right, and just to see how you respond and keep us earthbound. So it's a, it's kind of a, I like this, that kind of image. But actually, one of the devas who probably you've heard of is Mara. Mara is actually one of the gods that's in one of those high heaven realms. And so it's interesting, we often think of Mara, if you know anything about Buddhist cosmology, as sort of being like the equivalent to the devil, but he's actually quite different, even though it's similar. But so kind of start talking a little bit about the artwork. I'd say it was about 10 years ago that I started painting. And see, I had been a liberal arts, and one of my majors was art. And I never really took a whole lot of figure painting or drawing, you know, just the minimum. So I never got really good at it, and was always kind of afraid of doing that. So then, as I was visiting my parents, and just to kind of get out of their way, I just started. My mother had these really cheap kind of fabric paint that you'd paint on like T-shirts and things. And I decided to do a few paintings. I was moving up to Arrow River, and I knew they didn't have any sort of artwork, or what they had was really, really old. And I had an idea of doing three paintings. I wanted to do one of our teacher, Ajahn Chah. So I started painting. I hadn't painted since I graduated from college, and I just loved it. And my mother saw this, so she bought me a set of paints. And so I just slowly started. I took on a project for 2 years of painting one image of Ajahn Chah over and over and over again. I think Mark and Wynn are suffering with one of my early results. So it was like I'd paint them. So you have, you know, almost 600 paintings. Most of them ended up in the fire for fire starter. But and it took me about 2 years though before I could actually get an image to kind of look like what I really wanted it to look like. You know, consistently, like 95% of the time, it would actually look like Ajahn Chah. And it was interesting when I did the icon workshop. The teacher was his name's Father Damien, and he was kind of surprised when I told him this. But he said when he got his instructions on how to be an icon painter, his teacher gave him 3 days of instructions, and that's all he got. And so he basically gave him the technique, and then he left, and he had to figure it out on his own. So it was all about experimentation, how to use the pigments, how to get the right tones right, and with, you know, I'd say the icon painting, it's the egg tempora. So it was like the you know, humidity makes a difference, the temperature makes a difference, the what you're painting on, how dry it is makes a difference. And so there's all these things that you just have to learn through experience. And so he said, you know, when he first started painting, he said it took about 2 years before anybody actually realized he was painting figures. You know, it's like, and he said, you know, and I said, oh yeah, I understand that. And he was kind of surprised. I said, yeah, it was like 2 years before I could actually do a human face that looked like a human face. Because we all know it. You know, it's like, that's how we recognize people, is through the face. So if you're drawing a picture of a face, and just if one eye is a millimeter off, people see that. You know, or if it's 2 millimeters off, it's then it's wrong. So the two hardest things to do are the face and the hands. Everybody knows what those look like and how they are. So it takes, you know, it takes a lot of time. So just for over 2 years, I kept painting over and over the same painting. And then I would try a few others every once in a while just to kind of keep it a variety. But, you know, just basically 2 years. So it's just, to me, it's like, you know, speaking of, you know, the dedication to meditation practice and just, you know, doing one thing over and over and over again. And trying to, one thing that was fascinating though was like I was doing the painting of Ajahn Chah, like as I started getting sort of better and better at it, I started noticing, like, you know, the folds of the robes, if you actually pay attention, it's like you can actually tell there's an arm under there because of the shadow. So it's like I noticed, I go back and look at the early paintings, like, wow, I totally missed that. Or I could actually see what was happening under his robe. I could tell where his feet were and where his hands were, and just by the robes. And so it was totally amazing to me, like, how much I was still learning, you know, after 2 years. I think you see a picture, it's like, okay, you know what it looks like. But I was still learning more and more. Almost every time I paint it, it just, that fascinated me. But then what happened was I got to the point where I could do it, say, 95% of the time, and I lost interest. So I kind of set it down for about 5 years. And then occasionally I'd pick it up again and just do, like, we might have a visiting guest coming and I wanted to just do a card or something for them. And so I'd do a couple of paintings. So I always kept it in my mind, but didn't really pick it up much. And then it was about 2 years ago, I was on a winter retreat, and I had been doing walking meditation all day long. And it was completely unstructured practice. So, like, as soon as I got up in the morning, I started doing walking meditation, and it got to be dark in the evening, about 7, and I was physically exhausted, and I didn't want to go to sleep at 7. I was just like, no, I need to stay awake. And I even had the thought, like, if I just even read a book or study or something, I'm just going to fall asleep. And I remembered that I had my paints in the cabin, just in a box. And I had 4 drawings that I had done of Ajahn Chah. And I had this image of Lakota spirituality, the 4 colors of Lakota, the red, yellow, black, and white. And I had this image of doing 4 Buddha images in those colors. And so I had the drawings. It was easy to kind of convert a human figure into the Buddha image. And so I sat down and I started painting. It was 7 o'clock. And I finished all 4 paintings in one sitting. And then I looked over at the clock, and it was 3 in the morning. So I'd gone from being completely exhausted to just being completely awake. 8 hours had passed, and I didn't know even a minute had passed. It was just like, boom, we're done. And then I went over, and I sat until dawn, and then went down and had breakfast. You know, it was like I didn't even sleep that night, and I'd been completely exhausted. And so I was like, remember that. Remember this. And so then slowly, at first it was like maybe just a couple times a week, I'd start doing some painting. But what I started noticing was that for anybody here who knows me, I tried to walk from New Orleans to Mississippi. And that's actually the first time I came here, so that was 10 years ago. And I got really ill. So for 3 years, I was like sleeping like 16 to 18 hours a day, just trying to recover from this illness. And slowly, 3 years ago, I had my tonsils removed finally, and that's what's really kind of done it, helped me. But so I was... getting even after that, I was still getting anywhere from like 6 to 8 hours of sleep a day, which is kind of a lot for a Buddhist monk, actually. And then, when I started doing these, the days that I was painting, the next morning I would wake up and I'd be like completely refreshed, and my meditations were really good in the morning. And I was like, well, that's kind of interesting. I was talking to the abbot about this, and he's like, because I was kind of like, is this okay for me to be painting? It doesn't seem like a thing a monk should be doing. And he's like, well, it seems to be having good results for you, so, you know, go ahead and continue. So then I start painting every single night, and I would get so absorbed into the painting. I love this line. I'd have to set my alarm for midnight so I would go to sleep. Because if I didn't set it, I'd look over and be, oh, it's 3 o'clock. I got to get up in an hour. And so I'd just get totally absorbed into it. And so just, you know, much less sleep, but just doing something that the mind was interested in, that it actually, you know, loved doing, and it was always looking for the time, that energy, that enthusiasm actually did transfer over into everything else in my life, not just the meditation, but I felt like I had more time for people, and, you know, was more patient, and more helpful to around the monastery. But especially I noticed it in terms of not being... just the meditations just being much more clear. The difficulty was, though, is I was pushing how much sleep I was getting, and I ended up in the emergency room. I almost took my finger off in an accident, so I realized, okay, you can take it too far. John's always been telling me for years, he's been watching me working in the workshop, and he's like, you're gonna get hurt one of these days. And I was like, nah. But lack of sleep, so you do have to pay attention both ways. So I was like pushing it too much. So you had to learn that way. But so that's where I've, you know, come and paying attention is, you know, you got to find a balance. But so far, it's like it's been working with the painting. And I'll talk a little bit when I get into some of the paintings here. But I'm actually just now made the determination. I think I have one more painting I want to finish when I get back to Abaya Giri, and then I'm going to be moving to the state of Washington just for 5 months. And I've determined I'm going to set the paints down and not work on them, not do any more painting for a while. And I do find that I get these periods where it's like it's really important for me to be painting, and I get good results from that. And then it's always been my habit of just sort of pick it up for a while, work on it, and then set it down. But then when I come back to pick it up, it's like the other things that I've been doing in my life, like I intend to be doing a lot more studying, a lot more reading, and a lot more just meditating. You know, I'm going to have the opportunity to do that. And so I just have a feeling that that's going to then feed the artwork. The artwork I'm doing now is feeding my ability to meditate and study. But then if I go deeper into that, when I come back to painting, I think it's going to be, you know, something quite different will happen. And I'll show you kind of my next idea that I have. The other thing, too, is like I've been working on this summer, like 3 or 4 different ideas. And I just love it when I'm doing the meditation or doing the painting as this meditation, is that I'll come up with an idea, and then the mind will just be continually mulling it over. Like if I have like a half-hour walk from the main house where we do our meditations to my cabin, and I'll be walking through the forest, and it just the mind will be kicking over ideas, like, oh, you could do it this way, or how about that, or, you know, thinking it up. So I see it as just, it's always, with having those ideas in mind, the mind is at least always staying in a wholesome realm. It stops, you know, complaining about things or worrying about things or, you know, whatever our negative tendencies is. It's always staying on this positive. And so far, I've always tried to keep my images of the Buddha or of various, say, monks or teachings, so it stays in that realm. So it's always contemplating the Buddha images. And you'll see the very last paintings, I'm starting to get a little more abstract. And I was kidding the abbot. I said, I bet if I stop painting the Buddha, if I take the Buddha out of the painting and just do the rest of it, you'll probably make me stop painting, right? And he said, we'll see. Don't know. But I don't intend to do that. So John, can I see the first image? So I included this one kind of as an example of, you know, finally being able to do images that looked human. So this would have been what I initial idea I had was of doing, say, like a Tibetan Tonka painting, doing something. I like working quite large, so I had this image of, like, say, a 4-foot by 6-foot kind of painting, and it was going to have a large Buddha image in the center, like a Tibetan Tonka would. And the Tibetan images, you know, have all the sort of, you know, cultural, you know, images of, like, say, wrathful deities and images all around it that don't make sense in a Western context, for me anyway. And so I was thinking of how I could sort of do a series of paintings of, like, images that happen in the monastery. So, like, I did a whole bunch of paintings of, like, say, monks giving Dhamma talks or washing their alms bowls, or this is, like, you know, stacking firewood and just going on alms round, or people meditating, just sort of having these images. And I hadn't quite figured out what I was going to do, but I did a whole series of paintings, you know, like dozens, that were just sort of like, I call them studies, and so that's what these were. And then I would I sew fabric on the outside of them, and then I kind of have them as wall hangings. So this is, I just have this one here as an example of, like, some of the things I would be doing at certain times, just like learning how to paint and playing around. Let's see the next image. So then we were actually visiting our next door neighbor, is a Byzantine Ukrainian Orthodox monastery. And the abbot there is Father Damien, who's the icon painter. And we were visiting him when the abbot's mother was visiting. And we were there, and he was giving us a tour. And I'd been there before, but the abbot had just become the abbot. He'd moved from Georgia, and so I hadn't seen him for like 15 years. But he was giving us a tour of their monastery, and he was talking about the icon, because he did all the icon paintings in their church. And he was talking about, you know, the icons. We were asking him questions, and I realized, just listening to him, like, he was using his artwork as a way to talk about his faith. And it wasn't, you know, sort of pushing it on us, but it was just a way of him to talk about, you know, his religion and his devotion. And and I was in that meeting, I thought, you know, I really need to take my artwork to another level. So that was like probably April this year, looking at that. And I mentioned to him at the end of the tour that he was giving us, you know, something like, you know, you're kind of inspiring me to, you know, take my artwork to another level. He goes, oh, you're an artist. He said, what do you do? I said, paint. He goes, oh, I'm having an icon workshop next week. He goes, do you want to come to it? So I got to go sit at icon paint shop. So this is my first icon. And it really is a, you know, icon 101. So this is like, if you, I've met several people, I've shown this image, and they go, oh yeah, I painted that one. So that's like the first one that he has people do. And the thing that I found totally fascinating about this, and there's a lot that's fascinating about it, but there were 10 of us doing the icon workshop, and 7 of us were doing this image. And I think 5 of us, you could not tell the difference between mine and the other 5 people. And the beauty of it for me was that it's tradition. You know, it's like an 800-year-old tradition of painting icons. And they've, you know, really worked out all the details of, you know, how they do things, why they do things. And if you just follow the instructions, just listen to what Mark is saying when he's telling you how to meditate, you know, it will have results. And so I really saw that with this. And the beauty of it, you know, sort of doing the workshop was that I was, he was also, the abbot was working on several of his own paintings at the same time. So I was going over, and they were much larger ones, and, you know, background information in it. And I was asking, you know, sort of all of these questions about, you know, icon painting. And the thing with this image is that, one point I want to point out is, well, when you start off with when you start painting it, I like the image too, is that it's all natural material. So it's like it's a wooden board. I don't know what the gesso was, but it's all natural material. So the paints are, say, the egg yolk, and with a little bit of vinegar in it, and then all the pigments are ground pigments from, you know, right from the earth. So there's nothing chemical about this at all, and so you're building it up. And then the first thing you do when you select an image based on some sort of quality that you're, it's for the artists themselves, it's a meditation. So like you would choose an icon that you wanted to paint for a particular reason, like that particular saint or the angel that you wanted to paint represented some sort of quality. So you actually start meditating on it, and you actually bring up, so like if it's, say, loving kindness, you'd actually bring up loving kindness as a meditation and having that intention in mind, and you'd select the image. And then the first thing you do is to there's many ways you can do it. If you're a skilled artist, really skilled, you could just draw it on the image. But for most people, like this image was, you know, probably an image exactly like that. It was on a piece of paper, and so we had put tracing paper over it, and then you draw all of the main sort of images onto it, and then you flip the tracing paper over, and then you draw it again from the backside, just of the with a really heavy graphite, you know, the soft lead, and then you put that image onto the board, and then you either draw it again a third time, or if it's really thick, you can just rub it on. But we had to draw it a third time. And so then that transfers the graphite onto the board. And then you take a stylus pen, and then you go in and you, where the lead is, you just scratch very lightly the image again. So what you've done is you've taken the outline of that image 4 times. You've drawn it. And so it's interesting doing it on the front side, but then doing it on the back side. There's something about doing the image forward and backwards. It kind of imprints the image in your consciousness. So like they say, it's oftentimes the first couple of times you do that, like when you go to bed at night, you'll actually dream of the image. It'll sort of be imprinted in your mind. So that's part of what you're doing. You're trying to make it a prayer that you have with you 24 hours a day, even when you're sleeping. So that actually happened when I did this. And then when you start off with, it's not exactly that color, but the outside of this image is this gray paint, but it's very similar to that. And I don't know if this was Father Damien's sense of humor, but the first coat of paint you put down is called chaos. And so you start off with, and you're painting this chaos onto the wooden board. And it's at that point that you actually sort of put your intentions into the icon. So in the Christian tradition, the icon is actually blessed in the church. And they can have healing powers to them. So as you're doing the painting, you bring up what is your intention. It's like, is this for, you're going to give this to somebody who's sick or who's getting elderly, and you just want, you know, you just put your pure intention into it, and you're kind of saying, I think we actually did do a prayer at that point too as well, a very short one. we did a prayer and you're painting on, your intentions are into it. So you're actually, you know, putting that into the wet paint that's on there. And then when you start from the darkest colors first, and, you know, say with the flesh color. So here it'd be like the, you know, the part that's close to the hair and a little bit of the shadows under the eyes and things like that. You start with that color, and then you go from darkness to light. So just that image. You start with chaos and then darkness, and then you keep building up lighter and lighter and lighter colors. And then just out of, you know, very... I think this was done in a dip. There's some techniques that you would use up to, say, 40 or 50 layers of paint, just slowly building up. This was more of, he said, an opaque style, but he just does that for beginning students. So that may be only like six sort of colors that you just sort of built up to that, and you get this, that image just, you know, sort of pops out. And then one other thing he pointed out is with an icon, there's actually no shadow in an icon. So like you start with the darkest color, so that's sort of like really just pure flesh color, and then, you know, the light. So the image that you get, if it's done really well, is that, yeah, say it's not reflected light, but the light is coming from the beam. So this is like an angel or, you know, a heavenly messenger. And so the image, the light is coming from the person. And then the other way that you can also see this too is the eyes. So it's like, you know, it's, the first time I kind of saw these icons, oh, they're just, you know, doughy-eyed, you know, sort of, you know, kind of, you know, they don't, people don't look like that, you know. But what the image is it's actually sort of someone coming from the light into the darkness of our world. And so, it's, you know, it's a being that's coming down to help us. And then, so, and there's other things, too, that are kind of interesting with this image, like the halo and other images that Father Damien had done. It's like the icon actually comes out of the frame. And so you'll see that in different ways. In most icons, they actually transcend. They come out of the canvas. But then the thing I was totally fascinated with Father Damien's paintings and all icons in general, I used to always just not like icon paint. They're not really an aesthetic experience when you look at it. Oh, that's so beautiful. But when you actually understand what they're trying to do, a lot of it really makes sense. And so, like in a normal, say, landscape architectural or you know, a landscape painting of a modern artist, like if you're doing a landscape, if it's, say, it's the road going off into the distance, so the normal perspective is that, you know, the fence posts in the front of the picture are really big and they get smaller as they go into the background. What that does is that pulls your attention, pulls you into the painting. So the vanishing point is actually behind the canvas. So it invites you into the scene. What happens with it's called reverse perspective in an icon painting. So like the image would be like if one of the saints is holding a Bible, you know, in normal perspective, the front page is going to be the biggest one and they get smaller as they go away from the viewer. They paint it just the opposite. So the first page is the smallest one, they get bigger as you go away. Or they might show like Jesus is carrying a cross or something. Like normal perspective, you'd only see, you know, like two sides of the cross. You know, just the side and then the side. And I noticed like the way he was painting it, you could see the perspective from like three different or four different sides of the cross. And it comes up in many different ways. But what happens is with that, with reverse perspective, instead of the vanishing point, say, going out away from you, the vanishing point is actually you. You don't exist in the icon painting. So it's this whole thing of anatta, not self. You know, that's not so much for the artist, but it's for the. So there's a way of, you know, looking at an icon as the person who's painting it and the prayers that you do, and there's another way of looking at it as you're the viewer of it, the way you take it on. And it's interesting with the Father Damien was explaining that if you really look at really 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 skilled icon painters, like when they're taking on a particular subject, like it might be, you know, like if the artist themselves is really a compassionate person and they're doing an icon that's based on compassion, somehow that actually comes out. It's like with their intention, that it actually can be seen. People can actually recognize it, don't even know anything about icon painting. But that same artist, if he's trying to do something, say, like based on wisdom, and they don't have any wisdom, it doesn't work. It might be technically done beautifully, but it just people don't pick it up. So there's something with the artist, and actually it really is this meditation on trying to manifest and bring into consciousness what's being done on the canvas. But as a viewer of it, it's actually this real prayer. So it's like you come to the icon again, like with that image of like, this is a being who's come into the world to help us, and you would also understand, you know, what the individual was representing, what that particular scene is representing, and you come to it with this, you know, this humility, and it's actually kind of, you know, meditation and a prayer, and there's, you know, like, and there's all these images of, you know, sort of that reverse perspective that kind of say can really take you deep in your concentration if you know how to view an icon correctly. So I did this workshop, this, and everything that I'd done, my painting before that had been the one I showed you before with all the logs and stuff. That was pretty complicated, but most things were quite simple. And actually, if most people maybe have seen that little in the, what room do you call that? The community room. There's a little shrine there with a little painting. That was one of my early paintings that I did. And so you can, if you go look at that, it's quite very, very simple. But that's how they were in the beginning when I did them, and even to recently, it was quite simple. So I was always afraid of doing too much detail. So you want to show the next one, John? So this is the first painting I did after, you know, getting back from the icon workshop, and again, I really love this image of Gabriel, who's the paint, the icon I did, of being a light being. And so I knew that White Tara is this is the Tibetan tradition, but she is a being of light. And she's actually a physical, one of the physical manifests. She actually is the Buddha. I didn't actually understand that, but I started doing a lot of research. And so it's a, you know, one aspect of the Buddha. And I forget exactly what qualities she's representing. But I did this in one night. And I sat down. This is before I learned the trick of using the alarm clock to go to sleep. But I was like, I don't care, I just want to finish this one. I was just so really into it. And the funny thing was, like, I think I finished about 2 in the morning when I finished it, and I slept and got up about 4:30 for a morning, which is like about 2 hours sleep. But when I woke up, this image was in my head. You know, I woke up and I was actually in the dream meditating on this image. And then I kept it there for the entire morning, just very consciously, I'll just leave it there. And, you know, it stayed there. And at the time, you could have asked me, you know, how many flowers are in the garland, or, you know, like in her hair, headdress, and I could have told you exactly how many flowers are there, because it's, you know, and so, and we have a monk in our tradition who's really into sort of the Tibetan practices, and Ajahn Achalo is his name. And I wrote to him and told him about this experience. And he goes, pay attention to that. You know, there's probably some karma there, he having practiced and with that tradition and stuff. So I said, when I get back next summer and start painting again, I want to take this image and I want to do it in the Christian tradition of the Egg Tempura. I want to change, because this is all, again, it's really cheap sort of fabric paint that you paint on t-shirts, that's the material, the paints. So I want to do it in the Egg Tempura, and I want to, instead of just doing Tara as just this, you know, completely white, I want to see how to do it in flesh tones, but doing it with that thought of she is a light being, so the light's coming from her. So that's my next, who knows, things might change before I go back to it, I did a series of paintings of her, and actually, the last thing I did at the monastery is I went, and there's a Tibetan artist. He was a monk for 9 years, and he's doing a five-story or three-story tall Tonka painting. And his intention is he's using it as, again, for him to sort of preserve Tibetan culture and for him to talk about Buddhist teachings. And he wants to travel the world with it. But I went and did a workshop with him, and I showed this to him, and he gave me some feedback, but there are some things he didn't like what I was doing. But he was totally into like very traditional painting. He said the only thing he didn't really like is that I painted the flower color wrong in her hand. It's supposed to be a white flower for white Tara. And he showed me the images, and all the images look pink. And I was like, but you have pink in yours. He goes, no, that's white. And I was like, okay, whatever. But so is mine. Mine's white too. Yeah. It was really funny when I met with him. It's just this huge, I mean, it's like, you know, all the way up to that wall there. And I asked him, I was like, you know, what do you see when you see this? Because I just see it, it's only like one-fifth done. It's absolutely stunningly beautiful. And I said, what do you see when you look at that? He looked at it for a second, he goes, I see fear. And I was like, well, what do you mean? Because I was just totally touched by his honesty. He says, well, it says, you know, it's open to the public. You know, people come in drinking their Starbucks coffee right in front of it. You know, someone's going to spill it on it, or, you know, some crazy person might come in and cut it up. He says, you know, it's taken me a year to do this, and I'm so attached to it. He goes, what am I going to feel like in 5 years? You know, I was just like, wow, it's really impressive. But, so I've been blessed this last year of actually getting to do a couple of workshops and trying to, you know, just do the artwork. And so then let me see the next one, John. So after doing that previous one, I'd always been afraid of doing details. And so I was thinking, well, the thing about the Christian artwork was that it was a tradition, you know, and that you just follow a tradition, you can, you know, I saw the results of that. So this is more kind of that drawing in the background. I created it kind of on myself, but looking at architectural drawings and Thai artwork in ways. And so, you know, that's very... Well, the center image around the Buddha is also kind of a play on my being at Mount Tabor. That's the name of the Christian monastery. Is you can see around the Buddha, there's four images of, they're called devas, and they're just sort of rejoicing. And in the Christian tradition, at their monastery, in their steeple, they have these light beings up around, and they're called seraphims. And they just circle God, and they just sing praise, you know, holy, 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 holy. So this is kind of my initial attempt of what would that look like in the Buddhist tradition of having these, you know, sort of seraphims or devas sort of, you know, celebrating his enlightenment or, you know, sort of surrounding him. So there's like these fire, they're in the fire, and there's the flowers or kind of images of fire, images around him. But also, too, in the Thai tradition, my sort of critique is that they do these exquisite carvings, you know, kind of images like this. And then, you know, the Westerner mind just sees the wood carvings and think it's absolutely beautiful. But what they do in Thailand is then they spray paint the whole thing red. And then they go in with gold leaf and sort of, you know, sort of the highlights, they gold. And it just makes me sick. But it's like, well, that's the tradition, though. It's like I'm in the Thai tradition and I'm trying to do so. Let's do a few... You know, in the Thai tradition. So that's the next. So this is the drawing of it. This is the painting that came from that. And so, yeah. So I kind of fell in love with that tradition as well. And so kind of liked it. So I did a whole bunch of not a whole bunch, but I did five or six kind of paintings like this one. And then I decided this is actually that image right there, and it has a different head piece to it. It was actually the original for this. No, that's actually the Amaravati one. That's the Amaravati image. But then, so I took it and I wanted to do this image because this is the image of the monastery. This is, you know, the Abhayagiri Buddha image, our main shrine. So I wanted to, I changed it slightly to be the Abhayagiri. And so, kind of being a dark image, ours is that color as well. So I tried to do also in the Thai tradition, instead of doing the gold part of that, with like the devas and the fire and stuff, I wanted to do it like mother of pearl. And so I painted it kind of white with this kind of pastel colors in it. And then the black background, I had the black Buddha image. But what happened is the Buddha image is sort of receded into the background. You could barely see it. And it was very subtle. It was actually beautiful in its own way. So I decided just to go around the edge of the Buddha with this, the pastel colors again to highlight it. And I love the effect, so I was like, let's just do a little bit more, let's do a little bit more. And then the whole thing just exploded on me, and this is what happened when I did it. Can you show me the next one, John? Can we get that? It's a dark, I mean, it's actually not that dark. It's much more light. Can we turn the lights off just for a second? Maybe that will make it a little... Yeah. That's a little better. It's even lighter than that, actually. But it just the image I get of this is this sort of like, if you just look at the Buddha image, it's very peaceful and serene. But, you know, everything around it's like Mardi Gras. And so it's just like, that's real life, but the Buddha's just, you know, peaceful and calm in the midst of all of that. So then I just did this one about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And then I did a series of 3 or 4 other paintings. Can I see the next one, John? Oh, that there should be one more. Oh, maybe not. Okay, that was it. But I did. Yeah, that's right. I didn't put it in there. But I've done that every time I do it, I try to do it with a different color scheme. Yeah, we can turn the lights on. I thought I was going to talk about admonishment, but I guess I'm not going to have time. You have to invite me back to do that. I can open myself up for criticism, though. And then you can study how to respond to criticism by how I respond to your your feedback. I definitely wanted to leave some time. It's actually, we have about 20 minutes. And so, just very quickly, I did want to say, I wouldn't even get into that. But, I just wanted to open up for questions. Yeah. Well, I do find that it's like, just during normal, say, just being in the day normally, things like that. Like, say, loving kindness is the main meditation that I practice. So it's like when I'm physically sitting in meditation, I'll be doing, going through the phrases, very, very specifically, or, slightly different than, like, maybe it's been taught just because over the years I've developed my own method. But it's definitely like you're doing a method and you're following that. But then the instructions I've always been given is like when you're not physically meditating, you can't keep that intensity up because you got to be moving, things like that. But you just keep a very, just very gentle feeling of that, the intention of wishing well or not, just basically just not wanting to harm anybody. You just try to keep that as your intention. So it's like, I use the painting as a meditation, like I'll have that kind of continually going as well. But I just allow the mind to just to dwell in the object of the painting. So like, even while I've been giving this talk, my mind has actually been thinking about how am I going to do that Tara's egg tempura, maybe it doesn't have to totally be flesh colors, it could just be variations of the white, or so it's like the mind is there's part of the mind that's already mulling that question over. So it's like, but I very consciously let that part into my mind, and so it's just we all have our own tendencies, or negative tendencies and things like that. Mine can be quite be critical, like I think I'm really intelligent when I can put other people down. I can see what's wrong with them. So it's like, to see that, and then when I'm when I'm really involved in a painting and stuff like that, I might go like 2 or 3 days without ever criticizing somebody, and then I realize, oh wait, I haven't done that for a long time. It's quite interesting. So I do find like the painting is completely taking me out of that. It's like taking that same energy, that negative energy, whatever it is for anybody, it's like taking that negative energy and it's just being put into a wholesome activity. So it becomes a meditation that way. And then and there's also like a lot of planning or thinking, like the drawing that I did of those three drawings. It took me like 5 or 6 drawings to get it all symmetrical and to get it, so it actually, and I actually expanded it, so I put 10 devas in it instead of 4. I didn't like the way the Buddha was sitting on the bottom of the frame, so I had him in the center of it. So I got, actually, I think I got one image here. You might be able to see it, but yeah. So I just, it became more in the center instead of like this image is sitting on the bottom of the frame, and. Actually, people over there didn't really get to see these paintings very much, so you can see what I was talking about. He didn't get to see it. There's some, you can pass those around. And but then when I'm physically painting, it's like the way I talk about it is, it's like I just right now, like I'm every night for 2 hours. We usually, our evening meditation is done about 8:30. It takes a half hour to get back to my cabin, so I've got from 9. And then I will just from 9 to 11 at least every night, we'll just do, sit down and paint. And sometimes the mind just doesn't want to do it. It doesn't have the energy, doesn't want to do it. It's like tough luck. I don't want to meditate. Well, fine, meditate anyway, And that's kind of the attitude we kind of have. Like, well, I don't, it's like, especially living in community, it's like, I don't want to go to the ordination today. Doesn't matter, you go. I don't want to go to work today. It doesn't matter, you go. And so the same thing with painting, I kind of really use it that way. It's like, it doesn't really matter. Like, you don't feel the energy. So I do something. And it can just be, it doesn't even have to be actually painting. So some days I'll just go through all my drawings and just, try to gather ideas or, try some different drawings of it. Or oftentimes, like I do, it's really interesting. It's like the painting is only one aspect of it. It's like what I'll do when I finish a painting is, here's another another one like you know, have an image, you know, like this as a painting. And then what I do is I'll sew a piece of fabric around the outside, so for a frame, so it's like a frame fabric. And then I'll usually put two or three heavy layers of fabric behind it. And then I'll get, like, people offer me up fabrics and stuff like this because they know I'm doing it. And they're just, like, you know, really ornate, and there's no way I'd ever use it on the outside of the border. So I take some of the most beautiful fabric and I put it on the back side. And then I make this little sleeve that you can put a dowel rod behind it so you can hang it. So there's the sewing of it. So some nights I might just go to the sewing room and just sew the borders on, do all of that. But then even once you finish it, you have to hand sew the hand border around the outside of it. For like you do like in quilting. So that takes about an hour to do that for most paintings. And so if I really don't feel like painting, like right now I think I've got like five paintings that have just need that done to it. So if I really just don't want to do it, get involved with painting, I'll just do that. And so, yeah, but I just use it as every night. You're going to do it for 2 hours. So do that. But when I'm painting, though, the mind just gets really absorbed into what it's doing, especially like the one of white Tara, where there's like 1,000 different elements to it, and you know, hundreds of flowers and stuff like that. Just really paying attention to getting the colors right and you know, where they're going. So the mind does get, it's not one pointed in like say like what jhana practice would be, because you do have to be aware of movement and things like that. But the concentration that comes from that is pretty strong. So I do use it as a meditation that way. I haven't really gotten into using it as like, you know, like as you're painting, sort of like with doing the white tar, which I might actually do. And I asked Father Damien, and he doesn't do it either, because you do need to be attention to like what color you're using and stuff like that. So I don't really like, you know, like going through the loving kindness phrases as I'm doing it. And I've actually talked to very few artists that do, like even this Tibetan artist who's doing this really beautiful stuff. He, you know, he doesn't really try to do it that way. It's just really just being mindful of what you're doing and doing it that way. So, So actually, like you could see in the one drawing that I had. So like, yeah, I would work that out, you know, many times on paper and stuff. But then, like once I got that image the way I liked it, I have a light box, and so the light's coming behind it. And then you just put another piece of fabric over it, and I just trace the image. So it's like takes a long time to get an image drawn the way I want it. But then once I do, then I just use that one over and over and over again. And then I might notice things that I don't like about it, and then I can slowly change them. So I'm not, like I say, even though I can paint an image, I couldn't draw one still. But and that's a very common practice or way of doing it, is to use a light box, or like in the, say, the Christian tradition there of using the tracing paper to do it the same way. Because when I went to the icon or the Tonka painting workshop with the Tibetan artist, he did it the exact same way with the tracing paper. He had me do a white tar, because he knew I was doing, I showed him that tar image, I did a day-long workshop with him, and he did it exactly the same way. So I thought it was kind of interesting. But then you have to make the image three-dimensional on the painting. That just takes lots of practice. But it's interesting because like everything I've done so far, you know, I've always thought of it. Well, it's interesting because like before I did the icon workshop, my idea of an icon without ever really looking at them was just like a two-dimensional image. And so I have a bunch of images I did like that. And then you know, doing the workshop and realizing it's just the opposite of that. So it's just still learning. But everything I have done so far, even in the most recent ones, you know, it's still the image that I'm painting is reflect. It's the images of reflected light off of a Buddha, you know, off of a Buddha image. You know, the images I'm looking at are, I'll print out images from our computer. Like I'll go around and photograph, like say this Buddha image, and you know, and study how the light's reflecting off of it, or what images you see. Just ways to try to make it more and more real. But I haven't. Because that's what's going to be fun about it, is like, because I'm getting close enough now where I can do that. But now I'm going to have to reverse the way I'm seeing it. So yeah. Any other? Yeah. One thing is, as a monk too, because like we don't have money or anything like that, and so. What can happen, you know, is like as a monk, like you might become really friendly to somebody who's very generous, you know, because they might give you things and stuff like that. So I'm really very conscious of not trying to do that. So like, what I tend to do is I do tend to give everything that I do away, or either it's like, you know, I'll keep it for a while, then I'll actually, as I get better as an artist, and I'll think it's not any good, and I'll just, you know, recycle it or, you know, do something else with it, you know, use it as fire starter, you know, stuff like that. But if I do, my problem so far is like every time I do an image that I really, really like, you know, I immediately want to give it away. And so I never have it to study to see what I've done, you know, learn from it, which I think is fine. But I do tend to, I give everything away. And so I only have one, the very first painting I did of Ajahn Chah that actually turned out looking like him. That's the only one I haven't been able to give away. So it's the only painting that I've kept. So I very consciously give them away. And I think you're probably right. The joy that you get from painting, like, you know, how do you not get attached to that? And so that's like my biggest thing. And I remember telling the abbot, you know, it's like, you know, with not getting enough sleep and stuff like that, and, you know, painting and stuff like that. And I said, you know, here's the deal. Like, as long as I continue to make it to group activities, as long as I, you know, don't start missing, that can happen with in a monastic community. Somebody might get really involved in something, and then that becomes their whole life, and they stop coming to the morning and evening pujas and stuff like that. So as long as I can, you know, continue to do those, you know, everything that's asked of me of the community life, as long as I'm doing that, you know, I think it'll probably be okay. And as soon as I said that, the very next day we had a business meeting, and I forgot to come. So just looking at attachments and, yeah, I think, does that answer the question? Kind of, yeah. So, but it's been easy for me. I actually just like the painting process and the end result. It's been, so far, it's been very easy for me to give them away. But I do have to pay attention to. So far, what I've done so far is usually I could give them to, say, like, gave one to Mark because he's a teacher, and I've given one to the common ground here, and so I give them to like monasteries or things like that. So I tend to try to give them to people that are, you know, serving the monastery, not me. Stuff like that. So, yeah, you got a question? Yeah. Good. I'll have to contemplate that one. Yeah. Yeah. It does bring joy. I think that's definitely why I do it. And so, yeah. That's a good question, though, in general. Yeah. Ajahn, there's a, up in British Columbia, Ajahn Sona is at a monastery called Birken Monastery. I think they've, yeah, you know, changed the name of it since then, but Birken Monastery. He was a classical musician before he became an artist. And he's talking about, like, say, with the music, that, you know, for him, it's like in Western music, he said there's always, you know, the thing with music is that you always have tension, and then it gets resolved. So that's actually what you're doing in the art, is actually bringing up the tension. But it only works because there's the resolution in the music itself. He's pointed out, like in Asian music, that they don't have those same notes that cause that, and so it's very, or in, like, say, Gregorian chanting doesn't use those same notes either. And he was talking about that to somebody who was a filmmaker, and they were kind of questioning, like, the more they got into meditation, the less they were, you know, kind of inclined to make films. And he was sort of like, you know, just, they were questioning that, like, you know, what they should do. And then I remember him just sort of talking about that. Yeah, well, a lot of it is, you know, you're creating the conflict, but then you're resolving it, the same thing. So, yes, yeah, so art's very complicated. And yeah. Any other questions? Yeah. Yeah. Well, I see, you know, the way Ajahn Chah would kind of talk about it is, you know, metta practice is kind of, when you talk about Vipassana and samatha practices, so it's like calming practices versus insight practices. So, or, you know, calming or kind of focusing practices. So, metta would be more in that category. And so, it's just learning to, you know, developing mindfulness, learning, you know, to come back to the object, you know, that kind of practice. But Ajahn Chah would be like, the way he described it. So, like, if this was a knife, and this is the handle, and that's the blade, it's like, this is samatha, that's vipassana. You know, pick up the, you know, say, pick up the blade of the knife, you pick up the handle as well. So you actually pick up, you can't separate them that way. That's how Ajahn Chah would describe it. So in developing, like the way I describe, like say, like, you know, the kind of focusing meditations. It's like, you know, you want to be able to say focus the mind. So you sit down and you just want to be with the breath. So you sit down, but you can't do it. Your mind's wandering all over the place and stuff like that. So you start learning. You actually use Vipassana in some ways to like sort of figure out, well, you know, if I didn't stay up till 3 a.m. painting, you know, I'd have more energy, so I could do this. Or if I eat this particular type of food, then I feel agitated the next day. Or if I'm in a conversation with somebody and I disagree with them, if I argue with them, I'm going to feel agitated. So you start learning through the sort of, you know, investigation practices, the Vipassana, you know, why you can't do the samatha. But then as you start learning that, then your samatha gets better, your concentration gets better, and then because of that, then your concentration gets better. The Vipassana gets stronger. You start seeing things at a different level. So I see it as they're very interrelated. So it's like, I say I do loving kindness practice, but a lot of it's investigation of why I don't practice it, or, you know, how I'm failing, or things like that. Yeah. So I say, try to do them both all the time. But there is a distinction, you know, in terms of like how you're focusing or what you're doing. So I just tend to put my focus on the loving kindness, or, you know, those kinds of practices. Where at a certain point, you know, it's good to really just bring that up as a compliment, as a reflection, you know, sort of seeing life in terms of how everything's, you know, changing, or there's stress to it. So there's benefits of each one, and you should, you know, experiment and see. My teacher, Ajahn Pasna, would just say, you just pay attention to the results, and just say, if it leads you to you know, more energy, to less attachment, to being kinder, then great. But if it's leading the opposite direction, then, well, maybe you need to tweak the practice a little bit. Yeah. Any questions over here? Getting close to 9. One more question? Yeah, Gail.
Maybe just tease us a little bit about...
Yeah, in terms of like, yeah, being self-critical of the way the paintings come out. That, I don't know why, but that's never come up for me. You know, it's just, if it doesn't work out, it's like, okay, rip it up. You know, just didn't work. Yeah, that's actually, I know a lot of people, they've asked me that question before, and I remember the first time hearing it going, I mean, I know why people do that and stuff like that, but I just realized that's just not part of my personality. Yeah, I mean, I don't see myself as ever, you know, wanting to be a professional artist, or, you know, wanting to get my picture in that museum. There's no goal behind it in terms of, you know, the outcome of the painting. Like, you know, I don't care if nobody ever liked them. You know, I would still be doing it because I can see the benefits for myself. So yeah, so I don't really have I'm not doing them because I want to do great artwork. Yeah, that's not it at all. I mean, if it happens, maybe, I don't know if it'd be good or not. It could be bad, because it might be quite a distraction. But right now, yeah, there's no attachment to it at all. I think a gentleman's, you know, comment about, you know, the attachment to actually doing it. That's where I would, like, if I got in a situation where I couldn't do it, I would suffer because of that, not because of, you know, that would be. But that's why I'm actually also too putting it down for the next 5 months, just to see how I react to that, and because, you know, it's like it is the, well, Mark was sort of pointing out, I was you know, in the Christian tradition of teaching, to say, you know, what is the word of God? It's they talk about it in terms of the teaching, the word, it's in the Bible, it's written. That's one way of talking about the word. The other is the liturgy. So the way they chant, or the Gregorian chanting, and the music in the church, that's considered one of the three very valid ways of expressing your, you know, God. And the third one is the icon painting. And I kind of realized, like, in the Theravada tradition and the Thai forest tradition, you know, our chanting is like, ugh. it's like a ward, you know, it's very, very dull. There's hardly, you know, we don't use instruments at all, and it's just, you know, it's pretty dry, our chanting. So music isn't part of our tradition. And then, you know, it's mainly Dhamma talks and books. That's like how we do everything. But Mark was pointing out, it's like, no, it's actually being, he didn't mean it's in a negative way. It sounds wasted, but you're a performance artist. You know, you dress up in robes and you shave your head and you dance around with alms bowls, you know, walking through the village, and, you know, and you chant on command, and you know, it's like, yeah, it is a performance, but it is an art, but it is an art, and so it's like, so he was absolutely right, and so, you know, so a lot of, you know, a lot of it is, you know, so the creative energy, it's like when I stop painting, I know it's going to come out in other ways, you know, it's going to come out, and I told a story, like, probably about 20 years ago, I was a whitewater kayaker. That was my entire life, actually. And I lived in New England, and we're big, big whitewater. And I was filling out an application to be a big brother. And I was with a friend of mine who's also a kayaker. And they came to this question, like, you know, do you do anything creative? And I was like, well, you know, I was an art major in college, but I haven't done anything, you know, for 5 or 6 years. He just laughed. He goes, what do you mean? He goes, you're a whitewater kayaker. And I was like, oh yeah, that's right. Because it's like all of my creative energy was going into the kayaking. And it really is. It's this, you know, it's like dance. It's exactly like dance. It's just and so I was like, oh yeah, that's right. So, but then once I kind of realized that, then I started picking up paints. It was like, you know, I was actually subconsciously throwing all of my energy into the kayaking. And so, now it's like that energy will come out in other ways. Yeah. So, okay, well, I'll be around just for a short while, so if anybody has any questions or any criticisms you want to, you know, skillful comments, you know, I'll be around for that. So.
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.